Welcome to Spotlight on Science at the Smithsonian, a bi-weekly podcast from the Office of the Undersecretary for Science. This is Volume 4, Number 8, released on April 14th, 2006. In this edition of Spotlight, we'll hear about avian infidelity, mosquito models, ant fungus, and lonely stars. Now here's David Evans, the Smithsonian Undersecretary for Science.
In this installment of Spotlight on Science, we'll first examine the breeding habits of two populations of the Australian magpie. Researchers want to know if mates are selected for good genes or for diversification of the gene pool. Then, we'll study the introduction of mosquitoes to the Hawaiian Islands. Studying this event can provide insight into the mechanisms for the spread of new and emerging diseases. Next, we'll look at a special adaptation of some ants. They harbor bacteria which produce antibiotics that allow them to live in what would otherwise be lethal environments. Finally, new findings suggest that most middle-aged stars are single, rather than part of binary pairs, as was previously believed.
And now, Smithsonian researchers investigate the winged flings of Australian magpies. Spring is here, and all around us birds are singing and choosing their mates, making ready for another season's young. For many male birds, however, the hatchlings they help raise will not be their own. Genetic studies of a variety of bird species have revealed that on average, 11% of a female's broods will have been sired by a male other than her mate. The current record holder for avian infidelity is the Australian magpie. For these social and highly territorial birds, the figure can exceed 80%. Kate Durant at the National Zoo's Genetics Lab and her colleague Jane Hughes of Griffith University in Australia are using genetic paternity tests and field studies to understand the biological underpinnings of the magpie's racy sex life. Why would a female bird look beyond the nest for males to father her young? One popular explanation, the good genes hypothesis, is that the wayward females choose males that are genetically superior to their mates, resulting in higher quality offspring with better chances of survival. Another possibility, the genetic diversity hypothesis, is that females are simply hedging their bets, genetically speaking, by having their eggs fertilized by a number of different males. For the Australian magpies, which live and breed in tight social groups, dalliances with males outside the group could serve to replenish the local gene pool, staving off the harmful effects of inbreeding. Durant and Hughes put these hypotheses to the test by comparing rates of extra-pair paternity in two subspecies of magpies, the western and the white-backed. These two magpies are similar in most aspects of their biology, but differ in one important aspect of their social behavior: whether offspring born into a social group stay with the group or disperse to join other groups. Juvenile western magpies rarely, if ever, leave their group, while more than half of the white-backed juveniles disperse after their first year. If infidelity were simply prompted by a quest for better genes, then dispersal of the juveniles should not make a difference in extra-group paternity rates. But if it was driven by the need to minimize inbreeding, then it should. For the stay-at-home types, the pool of potential mates would include a high proportion of close, genetically similar relatives. For the birds that disperse each generation, the pool of mates would be comparatively larger, more genetically diverse, and less likely to contain close relatives. The risk of inbreeding would be reduced, so the genetic benefits of promiscuity would also be reduced. As it turns out, dispersal does make a difference. Durant and Hughes found that among the non-dispersing western magpies, extra-group paternity accounted for a whopping 82% of the young. But for the white-backed magpies, the figure was reduced by almost half, just 44% of the young. Durant and Hughes put the good genes hypothesis to a further test. According to the hypothesis, females whose mates were already a source of good genes would have little to gain from seeking new partners. By the same token, high-quality males would be less likely to be cuckolded than those of lower quality. Durant and Hughes trapped and measured the male white-backed magpies of 32 social groups, recording their size, weight, and parasite infestation as indicators of male quality. Comparing these factors with the genetic paternity of offspring in the groups, Durant and Hughes were unable to find any significant correlation. High-quality males were just as likely to be cuckolded as low-quality ones. Could it be that the females are looking for qualities other than those measured in the study? Maybe. But for now it appears that for Australian magpies looking for love, it's variety, not necessarily quality, that adds the spice. Smithsonian scientists are shedding light on mosquito introductions worldwide. As a threat of invasive species to our economy, environment, human health, and even our security unfolds, the importance of understanding emerging disease organisms and their vectors is increasingly clear. In a study reported in the American Journal of Tropical Medicine and Hygiene, Dina Fonseca, Julie Smith, and Robert Fleischer from the National Museum of Natural History Genetics Program, along with Rick Wilkerson of the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research at the Smithsonian, are shedding light on one pervasive vector, the southern house mosquito, Culex quinquefasciatus. The team focused on one of the best-known mosquito introductions, which, in 1826, brought the southern house mosquito to the Hawaiian Islands, where it is the sole vector of deadly avian malaria and a major vector of avian pox virus. In 1823, when American naturalist T.R. Peale visited Hawaii, there were no mosquitoes. This species has spread across the globe with human expansion and is now found everywhere in the world's tropics and subtropics. The earliest records indicate that this mosquito was introduced to Hawaii from Mexico in 1826 by whaling ships replenishing their water barrels in freshwater streams on Maui. The team performed a worldwide genetic survey using powerful genetic markers in order to identify the source of the Hawaiian populations. They performed DNA analyses on field-collected mosquitoes and five dried museum specimens from the Bishop Museum in Hawaii, which had been collected between 1919 and 1944. They discovered divergent Old World and New World genetic signatures in CX quinquefasciatus, with further distinctions between East and West African, Asian, and Pacific Australian populations. These divisions correlate with the epidemiology of human filariasis, suggesting variation in vector-parasite compatibility. This research revealed that the colder-adapted South Pacific Australian mosquitoes have largely replaced the original Mexican introduction of CX quinquefasciatus, which could explain in part the recent increase in elevational range in Hawaii. This replacement may not have occurred until around World War II, as no Pacific Australian genes were found in museum specimens before 1944. The authors also found that in Hawaii there was evidence of multiple introductions, and that most of the dozens of CX quinquefasciatus arriving monthly in Oahu via aircrafts appear not to reproduce, an important observation in the fight against invasive pest species. Researchers are finding that ants may be their own best medicine. Ants that tend and harvest gardens of fungus have a secret weapon against the parasites that invade their crops, antibiotic-producing bacteria that the insects harbor on their bodies. These fungal gardens are home to a parasitic microfungus, Ascovopsis, which is capable of decreasing fungal growth rates, reducing worker ant production, and can even completely take over whole fungus gardens. Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute researcher Cameron Curie, with colleagues from the University of Wisconsin at Madison, University of Kansas, the University of Copenhagen, the University of Texas at Austin, and the Catholic University of Louvain, recently reported on a complex, mutually beneficial relationship that has evolved, in which the fungal gardens are protected from the parasite by the antibiotic-producing bacteria Pseudonocardia that live in specialized body cavities on the gardening ants, who provide a home for the bacteria. The ants have specialized, highly adapted cavities in which the bacteria are housed and nourished with glandular secretions. In addition, closely related ants that do not grow fungus do not carry these bacteria and do not have the specialized body cavities. These findings are an indication that the ants, bacteria, fungus, and parasites have likely been evolving together for tens of millions of years. Astronomers are finding that most stars are single. Just how many stars are twins? Astronomers know that more than half, about 57%, of all stars like the Sun are part of multiple systems, binary stars or even triplets that orbit around one another. Most likely they were born in these multiplets. This characteristic of stars not only holds clues as to how stars like the Sun were born, it reveals something about the conditions that prevailed when planets formed. If, for example, orbiting binary stars tend to disrupt the formation of any planets around them, then our Sun's family of planets might be a rarer phenomenon than currently envisioned. Smithsonian Astrophysical Observatory astronomer Charlie Latta has completed a new study of stellar multiplicity and concluded, contrary to the conventional wisdom of a decade ago, that most stars now in the stable, long-lived portion of their lives, the main sequence stars, are single, not multiple. By reviewing and analyzing the current literature on star formation, he found two key facts that prompted this about-face. The first is that most stars in our galaxy are not like the Sun, but are much less massive. Indeed, most stars in the galaxy have less than about one-half of the Sun's mass. The second observation is that these smaller stars appear in multiple systems much less frequently than their more massive cousins. Perhaps only a third of them are in binary systems, not the approximately 60% for Sun-like stars. As a result, about two-thirds of all main-sequence stars are single. The findings mean that some process or processes during star formation tends to make many bigger stellar twins than smaller ones, perhaps related to the way their natal material fragments or rotates. Intriguing subjects for future research. That's all for this issue of Spotlight on Science at the Smithsonian. If you haven't already subscribed to the Spotlight podcast, visit spotlight.si.edu to learn how. You can also download archived editions of Spotlight. As always, feel free to share your thoughts with the Spotlight team at spotlight@si.edu.